We set. We have items on consent. I'd move passage of the consent items.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
With that, I also wanted to introduce Aaron Mormon, right in the audience out here. He's our new pipeline safety individual, so thanks for coming on board, Aaron. We're really glad you're here. Okay, discussion matters with the commission. Listing of work hours, notification, leave vacation policy, BP Calc. Basically, that was just me. I wanted to talk to all the directors out there that if everybody could put together, I guess, just a master spreadsheet of, you know, the hours that their folks are working, who comes in at 7, who leaves at 4:30, who's on flex time, and just put one together. Bonnie and I were talking about that when she came on board as a new commissioner. I think it's been a while since we just put everybody's work hours together, so we kind of know what we have for planning purposes. So we have a director's meeting Friday at 9, so whatever you have by then, we could put that together and just talk about it. So that was all that I had there. Interest rate study. Chris.
I sent her out a memo last Friday, I believe. I don't know if all of you commissioners have seen it and looked through it. Basically, we've seen a huge discrepancy between interest rates being charged by different utilities in the same situations. So I'm interested in the topic. I'd like to ask each of the utilities and any other stakeholders reasons, basis for why they're charging the rates that they do, and then kind of just gather all that information so I'm a little more informed when we go to these rate cases or tracker account approvals.
When you say they're charging, are you saying that they're charging for the capital that they've borrowed, or are you saying, are you talking about interest they're charging for late fees and
all of the above basically. I've listed out a couple of different examples. Tracking accounts, so when there's an under or over recovery.
I see. Yeah,
so they could be actually accumulating interest for the customer.
You know, it's an interesting point, because the cost of capital has been so low for so long, but some of the investments were made quite a while ago. So I don't know, Mike. I'm looking at Mike. I don't know if there's been a flattening of all of that in recent years. I don't recall that there has been, actually. There might be some pretty high. I mean, what we might be asking for is the possibility of refinancing some existing infrastructure, it seems to me, but I don't know. I don't know that we want to go on that.
I don't know if you've had a chance to see Chris's memo yet.
I have not.
Okay.
It's very good. He laid it out pretty good, I think, of why it wouldn't be a bad idea to get some of this information.
I'm all for it, yeah. I'm just intrigued by it.
His point is more about not so much cost of capital, but for instance, the company might use an interest rate, their cost of capital interest rate of 8 or 9%.
Yes.
And another company might use a T-bill rate
of 0.1%,
money market rate, or a savings account rate, or. And so the variances between.
Let's dig in. I like it.
He just wants to know if you guys are interested enough for him to spend the time.
Yep.
Well, I think so. And if they are different, which they are, companies can come back with their rationale as to why they are, and we can have that going forward. Yep. So how would we do it? Just staff request for, would require motion, I presume, at some point? Or could you just do it? Okay.
He's just looking for guidance.
Yep. I say get after it. I like it.
Bonnie, does that sound fine to you?
Yes. I read Chris's memo here, and, you know, I guess what caught my attention is he indicates the staff noticed a large discrepancy in MDU and Otter Tail carrying charges or interest rates, et cetera, and I think it's probably not a bad idea to get more information about all of this, and you know, better to be informed.
Okay, perfect. Well, enough to go with, Chris?
Yep, thank you.
All right, perfect. Item B3, FIM's letter requesting information on cast iron pipe remediation plans. With the incidents that took place in the West Coast, the San Bernardino, and also out in Pennsylvania, the Federal Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Group has really, you know, I would say, looked at new regulations, new requirements, new data collection, and we received a letter in the PSC requesting information about cast iron facilities in the state. The governor's office just received a very similar letter, and this was also a discussion item at NARUC, but I think in our state we've done a good job of staying ahead of the pipeline safety. But the PI meeting we had with NSP last week, we asked them for a listing of all their cast iron pipes. Where's Pat? I think we should do the same thing for all the facilities in the state. I'm sure we have that somewhere. So I just wanted to ask Kevin and Bonnie if they're okay with that, I guess what it comes down to.
I'm okay with it.
What kind of time frame should we put on that, you think, for their response? How quick can you get something like that out, Pat?
We can get the request out very quickly, but the response, we could try to put a one-month time frame on the response.
Okay.
If they have cast iron but don't have a remediation plan, it might take a little bit longer for them to develop a remediation plan.
Just in your experience, Pat, do you sense that we've got a lot of cast iron pipe out there?
I do not think there's a lot of cast iron in North Dakota.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know that until we trust and verify.
Right.
All right. Well, let's go for 30 days, and we could put a note in there. If they request more time for whatever, we'd entertain that. Because I don't think the letter to us gave a deadline. It just said they asked us to look into it. And for even if it's just a good idea to know what's in the ground.
Right.
Well, you never know. I mean, these companies are pretty used to dealing with PHMSA and system reliability integrity. They may be way ahead, but you're absolutely right. We ought to be informed if they are, and if they aren't, we ought to be on their backs a little bit.
Brian, could I make a suggestion?
Absolutely.
Maybe the letter requesting information could request two things. First, how much cast iron pipe might they have? And then secondly, what kind of remediation plan do they have?
Sure, that makes good sense, Bonnie. Okay, Pat, why don't you rough something together on that, and then we'll figure out who's going to sign it when it goes out.
You bet.
Okay, perfect. Item B4, Sue. Looks like, Sue, do you have quite a slew of them here, B4 through B6. Well,
we do that, and they're actually interrelated. But yep. What we're going to do is we're going to start out with John Jensen updating you on the Anderson Seed case, and then we'll move into the others after.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is John Jensen, and just to give you an update on where we're at with the Anderson Seed Company insolvency. As you have hopefully all seen and had a chance to look at the agreement which was reached with Legamex Walker. Legamex Walker had taken possession of a majority, if not all, of the seed that was being held by Anderson Seed Company, and was asserting that it was a buyer in the ordinary course of business and hoping to avoid the statutory producer liens that North Dakota law provides. We did, as you're aware, reach an agreement with Legamex Walker, which provides that Legamex Walker agrees that whether or not they are a buyer in the ordinary course of business needs to be resolved. And they've agreed that they will provide a payment in the amount of $1,593,400 in the event they're determined not to have been a buyer in the ordinary course of business. And I've provided at least my initial opinion that I don't think it's likely that they will succeed in their assertion that they were a buyer in the ordinary course of business. In my opinion, it's primarily based on the fact that it is unlikely, in my opinion, that a court is going to find that Anderson Seed Company, which was essentially in the process of liquidating all of its inventory, was acting in the ordinary course of business. It usually isn't an ordinary business practice to do a complete liquidation. So where we stand right now is we have that agreement with Legamex Walker, but we kind of need to make a decision on how to proceed. If we are going to challenge their reliance on being a buyer in the ordinary course of business, my recommendation is that we file a motion with Judge Corwin in the insolvency proceedings and have him make a factual and legal determination as to whether or not they were a buyer in the ordinary course of business. My anticipation is that if we prevail and we're successful, that shortly thereafter, Legamex Walker would provide a payment which could then subsequently be used to provide compensation to the various claimants. We still need to, at least from my perspective, work through some of the jurisdictional issues that are popping up with the fact that Anderson Seed Company had locations in three different jurisdictions, and how those three different jurisdictions are going to interrelate with regard to paying claimants. You know, whether or not North Dakota is going to be able to take the position that, you know, we've recovered these funds for North Dakota claimants, or whether or not these essentially get pooled to pay all claimants. From at least initially, it appears that all, if not at least a majority of the seed that Legamex Walker purchased, which they would be then providing compensation for, was held in North Dakota facilities. And I think it would be reasonable to take the position at some point that those should be used to pay North Dakota claimants, because, but again, it gets a little tricky because some of the seed was delivered from out-of-state producers. So that would still need to be sorted out. But I think the next decision or next step that needs to be taken is whether or not to proceed with a motion in front of Judge Corwin to make a determination on as to whether or not Legamex Walker was a buyer in the ordinary course of business.
Okay. I don't know if staff has a recommendation on that, but that seems like that's the course. Huh?
Well, I'd certainly concur with it. John or Sue, have the other jurisdictions pursued the Legamex situation at all, or are they just sort of watching us to see how it plays out before they'd maybe make some claim to it?
I'm not aware that they've pursued anything. From the phone calls that I've had with my counterparts, their lien laws are different than what North Dakota's are, and that is probably what the difference is.
I can tell you it's a hot item here at the meetings that I've been attending. There are representatives here or participants from South Dakota and Minnesota, and you know, both of them raised the Anderson Seed case as looming and large and very big in South Dakota. It's a pot ready to boil over. I don't know, in my informal talks with the gentleman from South Dakota, I don't know what action they're going to pursue, but I think they're getting ready to take some legal action. So I think, you know, they maybe are still waiting to see what we're going to be doing. Mr. Jensen, in the information that was sent, there are two motions included, but neither of them deal with the question that you seem to be raising for the commission to consider most immediately, which would be the motion to Judge Corwin to make a determination on that issue you cited, whether this was in the normal course of business. What are you asking the commission to do at this point?
What I would be asking the commission to do is just simply approve proceeding with a motion in front of Judge Corwin to make the determination on whether or not Legamex Walker was a buyer in the ordinary course of business.
And don't we need to get that answered before we go further?
I think so. Well, certainly we need to get it answered in order to determine whether or not Legamex Walker is going to make a, you know, roughly $1.6 million payment. So I think, yes, we need to get that answered, because ultimately that's going to be a very large source of funds, of course, to pay the various claimants.
Then I would be definitely supportive of moving in that direction.
Okay, that sounds good. Because Kevin and I think say the same thing. So Alana's telling me that we don't need a motion here at the PSC, just that based on our discussion today, that's enough for them to go forward. So
okay.
Unless one of my colleagues would have something else, I think that's the direction we go. And as soon as you get an update, let us know.
And that would be staff's recommendation that we do file the motion.
Well, this is a significant issue for, obviously, for the producers. I mean, this is, even in this case, this is a lot of money. So it's certainly worth pursuing. I, like John, I guess I like the chances, but you never know. But it's definitely worth the investment. Now the question becomes, what portion of that $1.6 million should we prevail is used to pay for the lawyer's fees and stuff? And I think it's appropriate that it is. I mean, that's my view.
Okay, and I was. Oh, go ahead. I just wanted to make one comment.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Sue. Could you speak a little louder?
Oh, Alana was going
or
to speak,
Alana.
But I was farther from the mic, too. I just wanted to make one comment that the insolvency process would proceed regardless
yes.
because we're still trying to get information. We're trying to assess
sure.
claims. Some could be credit sale, and there's a bond. So the answer to the question is really important into how much everybody gets paid, but it won't hold up trying to figure out all those other questions in the insolvency.
But the sooner we get the answer, the better.
Yes.
No matter what it is. We
right.
prefer one answer, but we need a answer.
Right, exactly.
All right. So how quick can we put that together and have it filed?
I think within the next 14 days, at least from my office's perspective.
Okay. All right.
I was just going to mention that the attorney that represents the claimants, as you saw in the letter that he sent to the commission, had asked for the commission to reconsider us going forward with the discontinued business for Anderson Seed and for issuing a license to Legamix Walker. But after we all visited with him on Monday, that concern seemed to go away, and
sure.
Therefore, staff would recommend the motion on that matter, and then the items that were given to the commission would actually be secondary to that being resolved. Then we would have a motion on item number 5 and then a motion for item number 6 that we've prepared.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So we're ready to proceed with those motions?
Yes.
Bonnie, do you have those motions in front of you?
I do. Would you like me to proceed with those, Commissioner?
I think that would be appropriate.
Thank you. All right. This would be in case number GE-12-78 and GE-12-645. I move the Commission acknowledge the pending request to discontinue business of Anderson Seed Company, Incorporated of Mentor, Minnesota, the expiration of public warehouse license numbers 1132 and 1153 by operation of law on July 31st, 2012, under North Dakota Century Code Section 60-02-07, and the automatic discontinuance of business on August 1, 2012, under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-07-02-03.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Let me move on then. This would be pertaining to Legamix Walker Grain Warehouse License Application, case number GE-12-122. I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-12-122 granting the request of Legamix Walker Sunflower LLC to operate a 305,000 bushel grain warehouse at Durban, North Dakota, and a 347,000 bushel grain warehouse at Sells, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
All in favor?
In this case, the facilities were purchased from Anderson Seed, and the license requirements have been met, and staff recommends the request be approved so that they can, as I understand it, process the seed so it doesn't deteriorate further.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So is that everything you need today? John, did you have anything else you wanted to...
No, and if it's okay with the commission at this point, then I will hang up.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you folks have a good day.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, Sue and Lana. Okay. Item B7, Kevin, legal counsel.
Well, I just, with Lana preparing for a nice vacation here coming up, and the filings by the outside counsel with regard to the Sierra Club lawsuits, one, the intervention motion, and of course we've already been granted the other in the case before us, but the intervening in the case, this lawsuit against the Secretary of the Interior, I just want to make sure that there are a couple things actually I want to discuss. One is I want to make sure that we get Mark on the case now that he's divested himself of any coal interests. He's been released from any conflicts, and we'd like to have him take the lead on it and make sure that we drive this thing now going forward and not miss any beats. Now, we do have good, competent, and confident counsel, but I still want to have somebody in-house that's on top of it and working with them. The other thing I thought worth discussing is the issue of opening a docket, which I think is appropriate, realizing that there are some things that are public and some things aren't. I mean, there are things that are going to be public anyway in district court. I think we ought to have a docket that, because people will naturally be looking here, I think we ought to be as transparent as prudent and as legal. So two dockets, sure. Two dockets, right. We have the two cases. So no, I don't think discussed that formally as a commission, the issue of the docket. So for what it's worth, I think we ought to have dockets.
Well, the only thing I would add, Kevin, is I don't disagree with the dockets at all, but the way I understand, you're just going to be out for 2 weeks. You'll be accessible by phone. Obviously, when Alana's gone, I think Mark becomes our in-house point of contact, but I'm not inclined to switch counsel.
I am.
So I don't know, Bonnie, if you have any thoughts on that, we might need to schedule a different session on that. But did she drop off?
Oh, so Commissioner Kramer, would you reiterate for me what the rationale is here for...
Well, there's a couple of things, Bonnie. One is that we have all these insolvencies that are clearly in Alana's portfolio, and we need her full attention on those. That's probably the biggest factor for me. The second factor, and the fact that the public utilities workload right now from a legal standpoint, given that we have the ability to utilize and do utilize outside counsel for citing cases, and as well as the opportunity if there are some economic cases to do the same, that Mark really has more capacity to do it. But the other factor is that, you know, that Mark's a litigator and that we're in litigation. And I just think that those skill sets, that experience, lends itself better as well to the situation we're in. And then we're in court.
Well, we also have the pending, in this way, we may have to, like I said, go somewhere else, but we also have the AT&T, the Missouri Valley Mid-Continent. So there are things going on. I don't like the idea of changing attorneys once we get going.
Well, I don't know that we're changing attorneys. I think we
laid it out with
finally
Alana.
Get to and appoint one to the case that's a litigator. The other case, the telecom case, is obviously a big case as well in federal court, which I think is a...
And that's Mark's case.
That's Mark's case, right. And so we have another the litigator in a federal litigation with, again, outside counsel, given the fact that we're defending our order, but the company that's affected by the order has experienced legal counsel, experienced litigation legal counsel that's also involved. So I think that's a good reason to put Mark on the case as opposed to the other way around. But
I want to be clear what we would be doing here. Alana, are you there?
Yes, okay. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Did you or somebody send me any kind of a memo on that?
No, I didn't. I just saw it on the agenda and talked with you.
I put it on the other day or yesterday when I got the memo that Mark had been released from a conflict.
Well, why don't we take... I mean, Bonnie, I think I'm hearing you say is that you'd like some more background. So, I mean, if...
I certainly would. I'm trying to flip through my messages here, and all I saw was that that there had been a resolution of whatever question about a conflict of interest. But I didn't... I'm not prepared to make a kind of a decision on this other issue now. So could we hold this over and talk about this at either a special meeting or what do we have coming up, Commissioner Kalk?
We're going to have a special meeting for the budget. We've got directors.
Right.
Meeting. I think if what we could do is just put together a memo from two different viewpoints about the pros and cons each way, because there's valid points either way. And then I think within a week we could wrap this up pretty quick.
I would really prefer that than making a decision right at this moment without some, I like the idea of basically a couple of position papers.
Okay.
And it sounds like we have other sessions coming up shortly that we can handle it at.
Absolutely.
Sure. Would Scott be done? I mean, Alana is leaving. When are you leaving, Alana?
I'm gone for 2 weeks, starting at Monday. But we cover for each other. So, Mark's going to be covering if anything comes up on this case for those 2 weeks, regardless. I don't expect things to come up because I think what stage it's in now, based on talking to Mr. Seabee yesterday, is preparing the substantive response to the complaint by discussing the policy memo issue with Jim and with Tara and the work that's been done already on background on those policy memos. So, but Mark will be involved in that if there needs to be legal involvement. I think Mr. Seabee and Jim are going to be meeting on that next week to prepare that response.
Oh, good. Well, and that would be a good time for Mark to be at that meeting,
yeah,
obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the point, is everybody needs to know what everybody's doing.
Yeah, exactly. So. And that's what we planned on. But otherwise, I don't know that there's any major decisions, but people will bring them to your attention if they come up, as we normally do.
And you will be available by phone or email. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Most of the time, anyway.
All right. Well, let's move on to... We had one more discussion with... I held over BF8, the... Basically what it was a motion to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing. NSP has filed paperwork dealing with the things required of the rate case, talking about performance-based rates. And so this is one of those things that I was thinking about I would just want a hearing on, just because it could be pretty – it's new to develop this. But then after I thought about it a little bit, I was trying to just get your thoughts, Kevin and Bonnie, about maybe an informal would meet that same requirement, because I'd like to have a little bit more ability to have pre-filed testimony from the companies to look at, more than just having an informal where they come in and hand us something and then we go through it. I mean, because the informals, we don't get any prep to go through stuff very much. I just wanted to bounce that by staff a little bit and my colleagues. So, Mike, did you have any thoughts on that, or Kevin or Bonnie? Or
Go ahead,
Bonnie.
Well, I was just going to say I need to find that material. Hold on for just a moment, or maybe Commissioner Kramer could go ahead while I'm retrieving that. I have a pile of papers all over here.
It's BF8, Bonnie. It's the
Central Plains. No, what is it? Oh.
Notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's electric rate increase application and customer credit settlement.
Okay. So you're thinking you would want a formal hearing on it?
Well, that's what I was leaning towards yesterday, but I thought about it some more last night, and I guess my desire is to make sure we get some information ahead of time, significant information as to how they're going to set this up. I think it's a really good idea the way we're going to performance-based rates, but maybe more opportunity to see pre-filed testimony, more opportunity to ask questions. Bouncing back and forth.
I mean, this is a rate case.
It is a rate case.
It really is. It's a rate case. So, it seems to me that it should be treated as such.
Well, that's why, rather than issue a notice of hearing, if nobody requests a hearing, when I read this, I probably wanted a hearing anyway. So So why wouldn't we just schedule the hearing, was my thoughts.
Well, I don't disagree with that, Brian.
Okay. That's not to say that an informal does. You can still have all the rules of evidence. You still build a record. You still have all the. You just have a better conversation. So I'm not necessarily saying I'd be opposed to an informal, but it is a rate case, and I think that to educate or to put out enough notice to be comfortable that people that might have an interest understand what's going on. You know, that would be my only caution. We're not talking about raising rates or anything necessarily, but you know, this performance—it's a pretty significant, it's a pretty significant issue.
And this could be the way going forward for us in rate cases, depending on how this comes out.
Well, we've done it before. I mean, we had 5 years of PBR with this same company, so it's not like we're not
right.
You're not unaccustomed to it. But.
Well, unless you or Bonnie is opposed to it, I would perhaps just have them change the motion, and we'll just schedule a hearing.
Rather than wait for someone to request it, just go ahead and schedule it?
Well, yeah, exactly. Rather than send out a notice now for if does anybody want a hearing within 30 days, nobody asks for
right.
a hearing, and then we go back and ask for one. Just do it right up front.
Mike,
I agree with that.
You're the lead advocate on that case. I mean,
I think it could be handled either way, formal or informal. I don't envision writing much more than I've already written in the memo. I mean, I can put it in a more formal format. So it doesn't make much difference to me. It's not going to be a lot of time for me either way.
Okay.
You know, there's basically two issues. The $50 payment that they will make to customers if you have more than three outages, and then the rather large one, the company will have the opportunity to earn $250,000 to $1 million more, depending upon its
performance.
And, as my memo points out, I've argued for a little harder to reach benchmark. I don't think it's great enough that they're going to have a lot of consternation over. And so, to me, then I would lean more towards informal hearing. But again, doesn't make any difference to me. I'm not going to change much of what I've already written. So,
is there any reason why we ought to talk about? We know there's a. They've informed us of their intent to file a rate increase fairly soon. I mean, is there any reason to suggest rolling this into that, or is this something we want to settle prior to that?
Well, I'd have to explore that with them. I don't know how serious they are about filing a rate.
Oh, good. Okay.
At this point. But I think the timing might be an issue if they're going to file it at the end of the year, the rate case at the end of the year. This is designed to begin implementation, you know, January 1. You want to have a full year's worth of
Sure.
So that might be problematic.
Sure. Okay.
Well, if we do this, so we're going to have a special meeting we're going to schedule here in a little bit. I would just say let's just put it on special meeting for schedule the hearing. That'd be my thought. We could even pick a date today.
Fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, fair enough. Let's move down to scheduling. Work session from Jerry, Elite Clean Energy. Jerry, you out there?
There he is.
I don't care when you want to do it.
Really?
Do you have some dates that you'd good for the company? Are you ready to go?
People in back, I'm having a lot of trouble hearing them, Brian.
Okay, yeah. Jerry's giving us some recommended dates for a work session on Elite Clean Energy.
Okay, I've got my calendar open here.
Okay,
so.
and I said I was ready to go anytime you are on it.
Okay. Well, I'm, you know, after I get back, I'm open the next couple of weeks here. As you know, I'm gone, you know, the week of the 20th through the 24th, but other than that, I will be around.
Okay, how about August 7th? Does that work for Kevin and Bonnie next Tuesday?
Works for me.
Sure.
10 o'clock, Jerry?
August 7th at 10 is good for me. Mark, you're the counsel on that one.
What time again?
August 7th at 10 o'clock.
Where's Josh at? There he is. Good.
So Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday at 10. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Special commission meeting for the budget to approve the budget and also Steve's IT plan, plus probably a motion for the NSP rate case follow-up we just talked about and whatever else we might have at that time. Josh, so you're thinking you have to have it by the 15th, right?
Yes, sir.
So would Monday the 13th be too late or the 14th?
That would be fine.
Kevin?
Either day is good for me.
13th works.
That gives you more, because you're still working on back and forth with the directors and some of the
narrative.
So does Monday give you, a week from Monday give you enough time?
Yes, sir.
All right. So what time? 10 o'clock again? Bonnie, Kevin?
Yes. That's fine with me.
Okay. So special meeting 10 o'clock, August 13th.
Okay. And you said, Brian, that in addition to the budget, it would include the IT plan and the NSP rate case?
I'm thinking those three right now would be on that special meeting, and I suspect there'll be other the motions for Sue's already saying she's got things, so.
And, you know, maybe we could handle the question of legal counsel Sierra Club lawsuit.
Sure, that'd be fine. Okay, perfect. All right, work session for CapEx. We're waiting for some paperwork back from them, Jerry, but I know you wanted to schedule a work session just to keep the ball moving.
Yeah, just to keep it moving. I visited with Mitch, who's counsel, and he has more dates unavailable than available. So,
give us the ones he's available, Jerry.
The 16th before 10 a.m. I'm sorry, before noon.
Fine by me.
Let me ask the question, though, procedurally, that the companies are more than likely providing some information that we have to get included into a record before we can even talk about it.
Yes.
Correct? So how does that time frame lay out?
We don't know yet. We have a meeting.
Once the company gives us paperwork A to include it in the record, how does that time frame lay out?
And we don't know yet. We have a meeting on Friday. We're going to
There must be a procedural question, though, of it. So there's no 30-day delays or anything like that?
Well, we're going to discuss how to get it in the record, too. I mean,
Alana has something to say.
It depends. Well, I was on the first conversation of that. It depends how they file it.
Okay. Yeah.
They had, and I thought maybe it was filed already, but apparently it's not. Right, Jerry?
They
had like
don't.
Three variations of how they were going to file it, some of which didn't sound like new. So if it's not new additional evidence, then it's not an issue. So it really depends on what they decide.
If it is new information, what's the procedure then?
Then there's probably a notice,
and
I think it's 10 days, what I'm remembering, but I'm not 100% sure.
All right. Well,
and then it may need publication if it's very new and you think landowners ought to know.
If all they're doing is reiterating or perfecting or improving their testimony for the route chosen, I guess that's one thing, right? That should be relatively easy. And I haven't seen it, but
every time. But not yet helpful.
Well, you know.
Potentially.
Perhaps, but that's really. But on the other hand, if it's, you know, proposing alternatives, then that's a whole other matter. I guess that's.
Right.
Okay, so that's your answer to your question why you can't say it.
So the short answer here is if we make this schedule, we don't know if we'll be able to keep it or not. We may end up canceling the work session.
All right. Well, the 16th in the morning is fine for me. How about you, Kevin?
It's not great for me. I have to.
What's Mitch's next date he has?
The 17th.
That's worse. So, okay.
Okay, the 20th.
Bonnie's out
that
week.
That's much better.
Bonnie, are you still here the 20th?
No, I'll be long
She's traveling
gone.
That week, too.
Okay.
You know, the rest of the dates available were the 22nd at certain times and the 24th.
Yeah, I'm gone that whole week, Jerry.
Yeah, so it looks like we're back to 16th, 17th, or else we're back to the drawing board, and our meeting is on the 29th.
What about earlier, like the 13th or 14th, or... Next week, the 6th through the 10th. What about any of those?
I just wrote down the dates he was available here, but his email had a bunch of them where he wasn't, and I think those were in that.
Let's shoot for the morning of the 16th. I'll just hump it. Transportation speech. I've become a transportation expert all of a sudden, but anyway, I'm sorry. Railroad stuff. But
do you have a time that might be better or worse on that morning?
No. But
earlier, better probably.
16th, mid morning.
Okay, 9, 10.
Let's go 9.
9 a.m.?
Okay.
All
right, you get that, Bonnie, the 16th at 9?
I've got it.
Okay. Well, let's see here. My notes say that's everything we needed to schedule. Is there anything else that I missed? Pat's got something.
Well, for the NSP rate case, would you be interested in picking days?
Yep.
For a hearing?
One day would do it, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
How quick, once again?
About 30 to 45 days out from
when the motion
the special meeting.
Okay, so the special meeting is going to be the 13th. So that means September 13th is 30, give or take.
Yeah. We got to publish in Fargo, so yeah, make it at least 45.
Yeah. Okay.
September 25th in the morning or October 2nd? Kevin, any of those work for you? Well, you're probably tighter than me.
25th looks open at this point.
For me, too.
25th?
Yep.
25th is too soon?
Yeah.
Let's start that in the morning earlier.
Sure.
So September 25th at 8:30?
Mm-hmm.
That work, Bonnie? September 25th at 8:30?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, that looks good.
All right.
I think.
Yep.
Going once, going twice? Sheldon's there. State Fair update?
State Fair was very successful. Thank you.
Excuse me, Brian, I'm going to have to sign off. Is there anything else urgent for me?
No, we're just finishing up, Bonnie. Thank you very much.
They're trying to kick me out of this room again, and I think this time I'm going.
All right. Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank you. Bye.
I'm just going to let you know that on August 9th from 2 to 4, we're looking at having a tour of the Wilton Wind Farm. Bonnie had suggested it. I have it set up for August 9th. So, just so you're aware, that it can be changed. It's not in cement. But I know as I was hearing you guys plan stuff, I didn't know if Bonnie had remembered that August 9th was the date that she'd picked for that.
Could you send out, you know, might as well send out a notice on that in case two of us decide to go.
Okay.
August 9th.
And they said it is opened up to 10 people. So, I don't know if anybody, staff or anybody else would like to go, but
all right.
As soon as I get it solidified, I'll send out an email.
All right. Thank you, sir. Anything else for the good of the order? I guess we'll sign orders now. Aaron, they're not usually this long.